या पंचभूत रचिते रहिता शरीरे शानो यथेन्द्रिय गुणात चिरात्मको हम ठेना विकुंत महिमानम ऋषिंथमेनम भंडे परम प्रकृति पुरुषयो पुमांसं I am separated from the Supreme Lord because of my being in this material body, which is made of five elements, and therefore my qualities and senses are being misused. Although I am essentially spiritual, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, because he is devoid of such a material body, and because he is always glorious in his spiritual qualities, I offer my obeisances unto him. Purport by his divine grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The difference between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that the living entity is prone to be subjected to material nature, whereas the Supreme Godhead is always transcendental to material nature as well as to the living entities. When the living entity is put into material nature, then his senses and qualities are polluted or designated. There is no possibility for the Supreme Lord to become embodied by material qualities or material senses, for he is above the influence of material nature and cannot possibly be put into the darkness of ignorance like the living entities. Because he is full knowledge, he is never subjected to the influence of material nature. Material nature is always under his control. And it is therefore not possible that material nature can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the identity of the living entity is very minute, he is prone to be subjected to material nature. But when he is freed from this material body, which is false, he attains the same spiritual nature as the Supreme Lord. At that time, there is no qualitative difference between him and the Supreme Lord. But because he is not so quantitatively powerful as to never be put under the influence of material nature, he is quantitatively different from the Lord. The entire process of devotional service is to purify oneself of this contamination of material nature and put oneself on the spiritual platform where he is qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas it is said that the living entity is always free. Asango hyayam purushaha. The living entity is liberated. His material contamination is temporary, and his actual position is that he is liberated. This liberation is achieved by Krishna consciousness, which begins from the point of surrender. Therefore, it is said here, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord. The power of material nature is so wonderful that although the living entity goes through the sojourn of the sufferings within the womb of mother, still in the entire planet, there's no one, even in this human population. Today, several billion people are treading upon this planet Earth Yet no one can remember the sufferings that were inflicted upon them within the womb. Although they have been going through this process so many, many times, in fact, countless times, nobody remembers. Isn't that amazing? Even a child of 2-3 years old, it only happened a couple of years ago, but they cannot remember what they went through for those months in the womb. After 7 months, that means the last 2 months within the womb, they practically have full consciousness of what's taking place around them. This is the power of Krishna's Maya, or illusory energy. Therefore, although everybody here has been through this process countless times, and it's so traumatic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to personally explain it for us to understand it and believe it. So there is much speculation, scientific, medical, of what is actually happening within the womb. Certainly, to some extent, they could moderate physical development of the embryo, but they have no way of monitoring what is the particular consciousness of that particular embryo. The most obvious thing that we see, we feel, we experience again and again and again, we don't even know it ever happened. As far as we're concerned, everything's just a blank void, and then we come out from the womb of our mother and we start crying. Why are we crying? Crying is an emotion. It's an emotion of either pain or confusion and bewilderment. It's a very deep emotion. Many of you know that something has to move you somewhat deeply to invoke tears, especially for men. Something has to really move you. You have to be really confused, bewildered, in pain, in ecstasy. Something has to be there. So when the child comes out of the womb, it's screaming, it's crying. I mean, it's in a very developed state of consciousness to try to express its emotions. And it doesn't just suddenly appear when it comes out. That means it's been in that very sensitive, delicate state of consciousness within the womb. Now, here, Lord Kapiladev, who is authority, because he happens to be in the womb with every child that has ever been born in the history of creation. He is the Paramatma. He's watching, he's seeing, he's hearing, he's knowing. He's telling us what within the heart is taking place with that embryo. The conditions are so utterly confined. It's really like a prison. You can't move properly. You can't go anywhere. You're just there. Sometimes little things are biting you. Sometimes you're itching, scratching. You can't even move yourself to defend yourself. In the womb, you're totally in a state of being subjected to whatever is inflicted upon you. You're defenseless. These days, there's a big wave toward advancement and civilization. At least that's what they call. And part of that advancement is more developed forms of population control, which include killing children within the womb. I know in America, thinking people who somehow or other just don't have spiritual direction, they often say that India has 1 billion people in this small continent, subcontinent. 1 billion people in India. The United States has about 3 times as much land and about hardly 250 million people. 3 times the size, hardly 1/4 of your population. So the people of the West consider that the Indian people are ignorant because they don't know how to use these advanced techniques of population control. Or else they're just too sentimental to use them. But they do not understand, due to ignorance, that that child, that living entity, is part and parcel of Krishna. And it's in a completely defenseless condition. And the more defenseless a person may be, the more it is the responsibility of those who have power and influence to protect those people. Therefore, in Vedic society, it is the responsibility, the old people must be protected. It's interesting how the cycle of life, when you're a little child, it's the duty to be protected. It's the duty of people to protect children, to protect women, to protect the cows, to protect the Brahmins, to protect the old. When people became old, they become again like children. Oftentimes their minds start working again like children. They become as helpless as little baby children. Just like mothers are with their babies, many people, when they get old in age, they have to have somebody with them at all times, just to protect them, to take care of them. And it is the quality of a civilized society that it protects the helpless. Those who are poor are to some extent helpless. It's the duty of the wealthy to protect the poor. Of course, in an uncivilized civilization, people are more concerned with protecting themselves, and they exploit those who are helpless. And the ultimate limit of such uncivilized condition is you murder those who are helpless simply because they are, for one reason or another, an inconvenience to your so-called life of happiness within this world. So for devotees of the Lord who have transcendental knowledge, there's not even the slightest debate or question of whether abortion is right or wrong. It is criminal. It is uncivilized, worse than barbaric, murdering an innocent, helpless child who cannot in any way defend itself. So in that state, the child, in one sense, is in a very meditative condition. He's in seclusion, can't talk to anybody, can't express himself to anybody. But the sufferings become so intensified in their degree that Krishna, by his causeless mercy as the Paramatma, reveals to the child its own true identity in his nature. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmati rajnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarveraham eva vejo vidantikrit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna is situated in the heart of every living being. And he is the cause of forgetfulness, remembrance, and knowledge. It is by his mercy that he reciprocates with your desires in life that make you forget something. It's by His mercy alone that you can have knowledge or remembrance. Antakali chamame vasmaran makva kalevaram. We know that the goal of life ultimately is to remember Krishna at the time of death, but you cannot remember Krishna at the time of death by some mechanical process. He has to give you that remembrance. When we're chanting our japa, how much are we actually remembering Krishna? We cannot remember Him even when we're chanting unless He helps us. And we cannot forget Him unless He helps us. He's simply fulfilling our desires. So if we show Krishna that we really, really, really want to remember Him, He will give us that remembrance. But if by our behavior and by the cultivation of our free will towards certain desires, we show Krishna that we want to enjoy independent of Him, then He will cover over the obvious reality of existence and cause us to forget Him. To remember Krishna is the most simple, natural thing in all of existence. Krishna's miracle is taking place everywhere. Such art, such beauty. Every tree that grows, every flower that blooms. The development of the human body, the intellect, of the intelligence, the abilities in man, these are all being provided by Krishna. And it's the obvious natural thing to see that someone is controlling this material existence. It cannot be working so perfectly, so accurately, since time immemorial, without a supreme controller. Therefore, if we have a little bit of clarity in our mind, we will see Krishna's artistic loving hand in everything that exists. How is it that people do not? How is it that we have to go to lectures and hear again and again and again just to have faith in what is the most obvious thing before us? How is it that we have to go through austerities and sadhana and all of this just to remember what is right before us since time immemorial? Naham prakasha sarabhasya yogamaya samavrata mudoyam nabijanati. Because we are covered by the curtain of maya. We do not know Krishna. We do not understand Krishna because He has covered Himself. Just like in a dramatic performance, when the curtains close, you don't know what's behind the scenes. Krishna's lila is right before us. The entire process of material creation, it is His lila. But that curtain of maya does not allow us to see it as it is. Krishna draws that curtain. Krishna opens it, Krishna closes it, according to our desire. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmano vartante manushya parati sarvasya. As we approach Krishna, Krishna will give us remembrance, knowledge, or forgetfulness. So at that critical time in the womb, when the trauma is in its point of culmination, where the child is totally helpless, in a hopeless condition. Those airs start pressing on it. It really doesn't know where it's going, it doesn't know where it's coming from. It's really bewildered. You know the story of the birth of material existence. Lord Brahma, he's born on the lotus flower from Garbhodakshay Vishnu's navel. And he doesn't know who he is, where he's coming from, where he's supposed to go, what he's supposed to do. He's bewildered. It's a great traumatic experience for Brahma. He's searching up and down the stem of the lotus trying to figure out, who am I? Where am I? What am I supposed to do? He's in a helpless condition. Lord Brahma is in a helpless condition. And still, he has to helplessly cry out and pray for Krishna. And then Krishna gives him all knowledge. So that's how Lord Brahma begins his life. What to speak of the rest of us? In the state of utter helplessness, the nature of the soul is to turn to God. And then Krishna reveals knowledge. Here we find the living entity within the womb is understanding exactly that I am the spirit soul, that Krishna is the supreme soul. I am qualitatively one with Krishna. Is that I'm eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. But I'm separated from Krishna because I'm somehow or other conditioned by the identification with this material body which is made of five elements. And material nature is such a situation that one who identifies with the body has to suffer terribly. Look at how I'm suffering. In that state, the living entity is offering obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tate nukampam susumikshamano bunjana evatmakadram vibhagam hridvavapurvir vidadam namaste jiveti amuktapate sadayavak. One who is in a suffering condition, who accepts that whatever suffering is upon me is due to my own previous misdeeds, and in a helpless, wholehearted manner, folds his hands and offers obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That person is liberated. So this is the process of how the living entity is liberated from the prison of the womb of the mother. Krishna consciousness is natural. Krishna consciousness is our original, real consciousness. When Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, people challenged him. You know, why have you come? We have our own religions, we have our own culture. Prabhupada said, I have come to remind you of what you have forgotten, that you are the eternal servant of Krishna. This is the beginning of all true knowledge, is to simply remember that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. But even as devotees, how many times in a day do we forget this? Every time we try to enjoy sense gratification, subtle or gross, we are in a state of forgetting that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. Therefore, we must be reminded again and again and again. Sense gratification is the path of death. Prabhupada used the example of the little child who is playing with its kite and is on the edge of the roof or terrace and is so busy looking at the kite that it's about to run off the edge of the roof of a high building and fall to the ground to meet its death. And a person who has some love and care within their heart will stop that child. Stop! Stop! What are you doing? Come back. Now the child, so utterly infatuated by the enjoyment that he's having, is very much offended. Why are you interrupting my play? Leave me alone. But love is to stop them. It doesn't matter whether they like you or hate you for stopping them, but you stop them. So this is the compassion of a preacher. Sense gratification is the path of death. For devotee, death does not mean that the body no longer functions properly and it clinically stops operating, the heart stops beating, the pulse stops moving. That is not death for a devotee. Real death is to forget Krishna, to disconnect from our constitutional position, because Krishna is the source of all life. To be disconnected from Krishna in our consciousness is worse than death. It is something like the death of the soul. If you remember Krishna and your body dies, then you're elevated either to a higher position within this world or you go back home, back to Godhead. That's wonderful. But you cannot remember Krishna at death unless Krishna helps you. And he will not help you unless you really show him that that's what you want in the process of your life. And oftentimes, devotees, they become most Krishna conscious when they're in a miserable condition where they're utterly helpless. Vipadashantuta shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsyat apunar bhavadarshanam. Queen Kunti prayed to be put in helpless conditions where there's calamities around her that she has no power to control. Kunti Devi was in a defenseless condition. Her husband died when she was a young lady with 5 small children. Then there was all sorts of politics and atrocities being committed to her children and to herself. She was powerless. She was helpless. Children were banished. But yet Queen Kunti, when everything became very comfortable, when her and her children had power and control over their destinies, being made the kings of the world, she considered this very dangerous, because the tendency is to forget Krishna when things are too good. But when we're helpless, when danger is around us, then the natural propensity is to turn to God for help. Otherwise, we turn to our own abilities, our own intellect for help, or those of others in the conditioned state. Yasya aham anugrinami harishita danam shanai. Prabhupada often quoted this verse, that when Krishna wants to show his greatest installment of mercy upon you, he puts you in a helpless condition. Takes away everything in such a way that you have no one else and nowhere else to turn to except Krishna. What a sublime realization. Because of lack of faith, we turn to so many of the remedies for the suffering within this world when we're in a dilemma. That is our conditioned nature. We have to recondition our nature. In happiness or distress, in pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, success or failure, in birth or death, we turn to Krishna. We want to condition ourselves to naturally just turn to Krishna in every situation in life. He's our only shelter. He's the only one who can actually save us. Recently, amongst the counselors, there was a discussion of what is the meaning of a friend in this world. Everyone is very much longing to have friendship. You see, with little children, parents can raise their children and imbibe with them certain understandings of the qualities of life and the purpose of existence. But children have such a strong, deep longing to have friendship. And if you can somehow or other put them in an environment where their friends are devotees, then it's very natural that they're protected in Krishna consciousness. That's why it's so important that we try to create a society of devotees. So our protectors, our equals, our subordinates, we're surrounded by devotees who have the like purpose, who support and protect each other. But everyone wants a friend. Krishna explains in Gita, Surata Saravadehinam Ajata Satrabasante. Krishna is the supreme friend of all living entities. Because a real friend is one who can help you when you're in need. As is said in English parlance, a friend in need is a friend indeed. You don't really know who your real friends are until you're in a helpless condition. Those who are friendly to you, who have nice relations with you because they enjoy your company, when you're in need and you can do nothing for them, they're nowhere to be found. You call their names and they're too busy. They've already made some other friends because you are no longer a source of enjoyment for them. You're a source of disturbance. You're a source of suffering for them. So they abandon you. A real friend is one who will stand by your side and help you when you're in need. And at the time of death, who could actually help you? Only Krishna. Krishna is the only friend of all living entities. If you want to understand what is friendship, it's simple. Krishna is your only friend. There are no other friends. But someone who helps you to come to Krishna, someone who is representing Krishna, they are our real friends. Friends in the sense that they're helping to take us to the only friend. So therefore, only Krishna and his devotees can be real friends, because they're the only ones who can really help us when we are in need. So we are not concerned with simply sentimental friendship. You scratch my back when it itches, and I will scratch yours. That is friendship in this world. But one who can take you to Krishna, one who can inspire you to chant the holy names. Krishna never abandons his devotee. In fact, Krishna never abandons any living entity. Even the most worst, cruel-hearted sinner who blasphemes Krishna, still Krishna is the Paramatma, sits right next to him in his heart. He never leaves him. Would you want to live with somebody like that? Somebody who hates you? Somebody who blasphemes you? Someone whose life has tried to convince others to reject you? Would you like to live right beside that person, birth after birth after birth? We could hardly stay in the same room with our husbands and wives. We could hardly sleep next to the next brahmachari under a mosquito net. And we're friends. We have so much in common. Still, it's so hard to live with somebody. But even Shishupal, blasphemous of Krishna, Hiranyakashipu, massive hatred toward Krishna. Still, the Paramatma, Krishna, is right there beside his soul. Never abandons anyone, ever, for any reason. That is a friend. And like the Upanishads describe, there are two birds in the same tree. One bird is very, very much interested in trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Sometimes he eats sweet fruit and is very happy. Other times he bites into bitter fruit and suffers. But the friend bird never leaves him, always by his side, just waiting, just turn to me. I will give you real happiness. The fruit that we're really looking for is the fruit of love. Turn away from the fruits of these trees. They'll give you a little bit of delight in your mouth and it will perish within seconds. Or they'll give you a little suffering in your mouth and that will perish within seconds. That's material life. Everyone is looking for unlimited happiness, but we're trying to enjoy the fruits of material existence. And however nice it is, it gives a little pleasure and then it perishes. And wherever there's enjoyment, the other side of that experience is suffering. You cannot escape from it. If long as you're looking for happiness, then you have to find suffering. They're inseparable. Krishna has designed it that way, that the dualities are inseparable from each other. Honor and dishonor are inseparable. Success and failure, happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, heat and cold. You can't have one without the other. The more we're striving to have one, actually, the more we're striving to have the other, whether we know it or not. So the fruits of this tree of material life, they all grow stale. They all get rotten in due course of time. And Krishna wants to give us the real fruit. The eternal fruit of love of God. He sends the spiritual master. Rupa Goswami was explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag that wandering through material universes, birth after birth after birth, the living entity is trying to find happiness. But so many sufferings. Material life is cruel. Let us say you live till 80 years old. Prahlad Maharaj explains it so nicely. When you're in the womb of your mother, the first 9 months, miserable condition, lonely condition, bewildering condition. Then you're a little baby, and sometimes you're laughing and smiling, but other times you're weeping and crying and screaming and yelling. It's not just a happy existence. Just to somehow or other balance it and have more happiness than distress. And we see the little babies of our grihastha's children. Some of them are because they're raised properly and they have nice association and loving and caring parents. They often smile and they often dance. But then the next minute you see them crying and weeping and angry. Some little painful little thing starts growing in their face, or they cut themselves, or they have a fever, they have indigestion, and they cry and they weep. They're suffering. So all pleasure is so much mixed up with pain. And then you get a little older, and then mental anxiety starts setting in. No matter how much you can somehow or other try to make your body comfortable and happy, so many mental anxieties. Adi Atmaka, Adi Daivaka, Adi Bhautika. And then once you get in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, your body's just dwindling. There's always some kind of pain in your body. You can't do what you used to want to do. You're so restricted. Old age is miserable. Some people lose their memories. Some people lose their power to see, their power to hear, the power to enjoy anything. Power to even eat. It's only a few years away for all of you. But now that I can enjoy, let me try to enjoy. Despite all of these rebellious activities, Krishna remains right by your side. And if he sees a little sincerity, then he directs you from within to the spiritual master. The spiritual master puts the seed of knowledge within your heart, the seed of devotion, bhakti lata bija. And then you water it through hearing the glories of the Lord, through chanting the holy names of the Lord, through engaging our mind and senses in the service of the Lord. The mind and senses need activity. If that activity is Krishna conscious, then it's the source of liberation. We see wealthy people, poor people in this world. People are lonely, people are bored, people don't really know what to do with life. Prabhupada said, give them something to do for Krishna. If we have a society, we had these dramas, and we see people were giving so much of their lives' energies for months at a time, and they were grateful because they actually had something to do with wonderful people for a wonderful cause for Krishna. So the purpose of our society is to create a type of association to provide opportunities for people to be busy for Krishna. Otherwise, life is a dreary void by all spiritual standards. So the process of devotional service waters the seed of bhakti. And it grows and grows and grows. In the beginning stages, it has to be very, very well protected, because so many weeds are growing beside it that could choke it. So many other living beings are walking around that could step and trample on it. We have to protect. That protection comes by associating with saintly people and avoiding the association of people who are going to be dragging your way, your mind away from Krishna's service. We must protect it by following the four regulative principles. Sense gratification is like a thief that steals away all the great assets of devotion that you have created. We work so hard for something. We should protect it. We shouldn't let the thief of Maya come and steal it. So we must very carefully guard this devotional creeper. And eventually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, it becomes a ripened fruit. The fruit of love of God. The fruit that everyone is longing to taste, to relish for all of eternity. That is available for everyone. And in the age of Kali, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it simple. Just follow these simple principles of devotional service and fix your mind on the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. the little child in the embryo, in its desperation of helplessness, is aware of its relationship with Krishna. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. That it is simultaneous. That it is simultaneously one with Krishna and different than Krishna. And that only Krishna can save me. And the soul surrenders to Krishna within the womb of the mother. Not in pure love. When we surrender in pure love, that experience is never lost. So through our life, we have to come back to the same conclusion we had at the very beginning. That I'm helpless and I have to surrender to Krishna. It's quite astonishing. That in our life we want to somehow or other come to the same conclusion that we had before we even took birth, when we are laying in that abominable condition within the womb of our mother. We have to come back to that same conclusion, to that same realization that only Krishna can save me, that I'm his eternal servant, and we have to surrender to Krishna. That's not the goal. That's actually the beginning of the process to achieve the goal. Sarva dharman purityajya mame kam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. I shall deliver you. I shall protect you from all the reactions of all your previous sins. Do not fear. This material world is full of fearful conditions. There's only one means by which we can become free of fear. Abhaya charanaravindare bhajahure mana sri nandanandana abhaya charanaravindare. When we come to the conclusion of, with our good intelligence, directing our mind toward the lotus feet of Krishna and surrendering there, then we're free of fear. This Krishna consciousness movement is exclusively meant for the purpose of teaching people the process of surrendering to Krishna. In surrender, there is life, real life. In every aspect of our life, good intelligence is when we're trying to surrender to Krishna in that situation. Maro virago bijo iccha toha nitya dasa tua adhika bhakti vinod praise Krishna. If you want, kill me! If you want to kill me, I want to die. Kill me. How many of you can think like that? Krishna, if it is your desire that I die, kill me now. If you want to protect me, protect me. I'm your eternal servant. You can do whatever you like with me. That's surrender. Manaso deho geho jo kichu mor arpilun tu apade nandakishor. My body, my home, my wealth, my family, My very life I surrender to you, Krishna. You're my only hope, my only shelter. We must evaluate how much are we actually trying to surrender to Krishna. When we're chanting his name, how much are we trying to surrender to the name? When we're coming before the deity, how much are we actually from our hearts offering our life as surrender to Krishna? When we're hearing his message in the Bhagavatam Katha or in the reading his books, how much are we actually consciously trying to surrender to this message? The quality of our devotion is on the basis of our surrender. Giving of ourselves to Krishna. Making our life an offering to Krishna. To remember Krishna means to surrender our consciousness to Krishna. Therefore, it is the perfection of life to always remember Krishna. To always remember Krishna means to be surrendered from our heart to Krishna in all circumstances. Is there any questions? Yes?
Due to the miserable condition, the soul is praying to the Lord. The other day, Radha Gopinath Prabhu was giving class on this subject. So this question came up related to today's class, that this realization the soul has of the nature of the Lord, he is referring to the Lord as the only shelter, is why does that not last when it come out of the womb?
Why does it forget? Because that is its nature. We have our free will. When we come out of the womb, the tendency is we start identifying ourselves with the surroundings around us. This is my mother, this is my father, this is my brother, this is my sister, this is my body, this is my playthings, this is my food. We're distracted. We start identifying ourselves with all the phenomena around us of material existence. This material world, we should understand, Maya has created it just to distract you away from Krishna if you're not sincere. The child's intellect is not strong enough to maintain that realization unless it's supported by its environment around it. Therefore, the duty of a parent is to create an environment around the child so that natural understanding is preserved. Have you not sometimes surrendered to Krishna? But then material nature around us just makes us completely forget about that. We become infatuated. And we're adults with trained, developed intelligence. The little baby has very, very, very undeveloped intelligence. It surrenders to Krishna just because in that miserable condition within the womb, Krishna helps it remember. Because it turns to Krishna. That's the problem. The child turns to Krishna in the womb because it's helpless and it is nobody else. And therefore Krishna gives it this understanding of Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. Sarvasya-chaham-hridi-shani-vashto. But then it comes out of the womb and it turns away from Krishna. That's the reason why. It turns away from Krishna, starts identifying with so many other objects to enjoy. And then Krishna gives it forgetfulness. But if the parents around put the child in a very, very spiritual environment, then it's natural for the children to be Krishna conscious. You see, little children, during the kirtans, they raise their arms. They don't know what's happening. It's just natural for them. When people are chanting, they just want to raise their arms. Little children. I remember years ago, there was one little boy, little tiny boy. He was brought up in a spiritual community and everyone around was chanting and dancing and doing seva and talking about Krishna. Whenever the mother was in Maya, the little child, little baby, just first words out of its mouth, "Take me to temple, you're in Maya." natural. See these little children, how they like to dance? It's natural. Protect that. But the environment in this world, they start going to school and they start learning about television and they start learning about sports and all kinds of other things, and they're distracted. So it's the first duty of the parents to preserve that natural inclination of a child to surrender to Krishna, to be Krishna conscious, to cultivate it. So why is it surrendered in the womb and why is it not now? In the womb, we get that knowledge because we turn to Krishna. When we come out of the womb, we turn away from Krishna. And then Krishna just covers that knowledge. It's still there. The same knowledge that's in the child in the womb is still in your heart at every phase of your life. But Krishna covers it because you turn away from him. It's very simple. You turn to Krishna, he gives you knowledge. You turn away from Krishna, he covers it. You see, the soul in the womb is not a pure Vaishnava. It hasn't surrendered everything to Krishna. It just turns to Krishna. It surrenders to that extent of Krishna, I'm helpless. But it hasn't developed love for Krishna. If the child developed love for Krishna in the womb, it would never forget it. Prahlad Maharaj developed love for Krishna in the womb. Therefore, when he came out, he was perfectly Krishna conscious. But the child just surrenders to Krishna to the degree that it's turning to Krishna in a helpless state. But it hasn't developed love. So it's very premature. You turn to Krishna, Krishna will help you. You turn away from Krishna, he will cover. Does that answer your question? Yes, Radha Gopinath Prabhu.
Is the child praying, this prayer is with full realization or just knowledge?
It's not realization. The child is turning to God and God is giving the child knowledge. Who I am, who you are. And the child's crying out for offering obeisances to Krishna. But it's not fully realized. The child has an understanding of its identity in its helplessness. Just like sometimes even people in this world, when everything gets really bad and miserable, and they turn to God. But then when things get nice again, then they forget God. This is a very extreme example of that, that takes place to the child within the womb. It's the nature of every living entity to turn to God. But we're so conditioned, we've forgotten our own nature. We've often quoted the saying in the military, there's no atheists in the foxholes. When you're in the front lines and you just dig a little hole, they're shooting against you and you only have that little hole to duck down, and then you come, you're shooting and they're shooting. You can't get out of your hole. If you stand up, you're shot dead in a second. You may be in that little foxhole for days or weeks. And you see all around you, practically everybody's getting killed. And you know it's a fact, it's a reality that you're about to die. People turn to God in that situation. Maybe not with pure devotion, but they turn to God, save me. No one else around can help me. Save me. When you're helpless, everyone turns to God in some way or other when they're completely helpless. It's natural. Of course, if you totally just through abuse of your free will misuse your independence to such an extent, then that natural propensity is no longer there. It's there, but it's just covered and covered and covered by layers and layers and layers of ignorance. So the child admits it's ignorant, it's a fool, it knows nothing. And it turns to God, and God gives its knowledge. Similarly, Arjuna, taking our role, was helpless. Realized he was totally ignorant. He knew nothing. His ego was crushed. He turned to Krishna. Krishna gave him all knowledge. But he didn't realize it till he followed it. That's the point. You can be in a helpless state. You can turn to the spiritual master and the scriptures and the Vaishnavas and get the knowledge. But unless you follow it, you don't get realization. The child is enlightened by that knowledge, turning to God. But because it doesn't come out of the womb and start practicing what it's just heard, it doesn't realize it. Forgets. Immediately forgets. Turn to Krishna, got knowledge. Turn away from Krishna, forget it. When you're realized, you don't turn away from Krishna, so you don't forget it. It's not in the womb, but it's in life that you have the chance to actually cultivate that knowledge properly. It becomes realized. Then you never forget. Does that answer your question? Yes, Gauranga Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You were mentioning about population control techniques. So one medical student was asking me that sometimes doctors are appointed as medical officers in public health centers. And in India, every public health center has a certain quota of sterilization operations to be performed. And it's compulsory for the medical officer to assist in such activities. And unless he spends some time as a medical officer, he can't get a post-graduation seat. So it is a very difficult situation for him to come out. To what extent he is karmically implicated in such a case? If you want a post-graduate seat, then you have to be a medical officer in some village for 1 year, and only then you are eligible. But if you are a medical officer, then it is also compulsory to participate in these programs of sterilization. So what should you do?
You don't have to become a medical officer. But if somehow or other that is your living, and you find out about the truth too late, then you should try according to your means to stop it. And whatever indirect involvement you may have in it, you should repent. You should try to do everything within your power to reverse this dilemma. But sometimes in this Kali Yuga, indirectly, definitely, we should not directly involve ourselves. But sometimes indirectly, it's just, there's no escape from that situation. So we should try our very, very, very best to enlighten others, to give the truth to the reality of the situation. We should try to change what's wrong according to our capacity. And to whatever degree we're not able to do that, we should be repentant. And we should really surrender to Krishna. We should sincerely take shelter of the holy name, sincerely take shelter of the process of bhakti. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radha Gopinath Dev ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.